Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
The Andy J Podcast. Podcast.
Hello, welcome to the Andy J Podcast. What a show we have for you today. My goodness me. We have five celebrities joining the conversation carousel for you. And wow, some incredible names, including possibly the most famous person we've ever had on the show, Liam Neeson. Hollywood royalty. The Liam Neeson, you know, the actual Liam Neeson from Taken, the man with the particular set of skills. Yes, him. Now, I'm not going to pretend that it's the longest chat on the planet or some kind of super in-depth conversation with him, because it's not. It's, you know, about 5 minutes or so of chatting to Liam and his son, Michael Richardson, about their new movie, which is called Made in Italy. It's very nice little movie. It's just kind of a warm hug of a film that's out now on Amazon. But I got invited to the press junket, and the thing is, when you go on these press junket things, basically you've got a tiny amount of time with one of the stars or a couple of the stars, and the kind of tradition is you pretty much ask the same question that every other person going on the press junket asks, and you get a rote answer. Well, I didn't do that. I don't really do these press junkets, because that's, I prefer in-detail conversations, and we've got a different kind of show. But nonetheless, opportunity to talk to Liam Neeson. Of course I'm going to take it. It's Liam Neeson. So I kind of thinking about this, and as we connect, and it was all over Zoom, so we could see each other and everything, and I just thought to myself in my head, I was like, look, I'm going to big up the movie because it's a lot of fun, I've watched it and it's nice, and like I say, it's a warm hug. But I had become a dad for the third time 5 days before the interview. Okay, I wanted paternity leave, hasn't really happened, and I'm in the doghouse for that, but nonetheless, I just thought to myself, I'm so excited about being a dad again, I've got a lovely little baby boy, I'm going to tell Liam Neeson. So he ended up giving me some lovely kind of words of wisdom and some fatherly advice and all that kind of stuff. All the sort of things you're not supposed to do on a press junket, we did. And do you know what? The stuff he said is so lovely and so interesting and so dynamic. It just made me think, what a cool guy. I really liked him. You know, you can't get to know someone particularly well in just a few minutes, but I certainly felt after our chat, Liam Neeson is awesome. That was my impression. So you'll hear him. I'm not going to make you wait till the end of this show to hear from him, by the way. We're going to make him the second guest today so that you don't have to wait for hours. If you've just come for Liam, he'll be on very shortly. Our first guest today is Donna Eyre, who I think is brilliant. I love Donna to bits. She's been around for over 3 decades in terms of our awareness of her. Okay, she was in Biker Grove age 10. She's now 41. And she's done so much in between, including hosting things like The Big Breakfast, and she's been acting and all sorts of stuff, and she's acting again now, which is great. So Donna, I wanted her to be the first person on the show today, just because she's a ray of sunshine. She's one of us. She's just great, great fun, really lovely company. So we start off with a warm glow of a chat with Donna, then we'll have Liam Neeson and Michael Richardson, and then we've got Henry Lloyd Hughes. What an actor he is. He's in The Irregulars, that's just come out on Netflix, playing Sherlock Holmes, which is no easy task, by the way. He's an amazing actor. He's an actor that should be much, much better known, given what he's been in. Shows like The Inbetweeners and Killing Eve and the Harry Potter movie and so many other amazing TV shows and films. More about him later, of course, but he's one of the guys on the way, and I really rate him very, very highly. And what a great chat we had. He's great, great company. And then my last guest today, she was in Call of Duty. She's in the new BBC One drama, The Syndicate. The lovely Taj Atwal. She's going to close out the show. She was amazing as well. So, yeah, it's just, like I say, it's just a really friendly, happy listen this week. So thank you very much for your company. If you're new to the AJ Pod, we've got a colossal back catalogue of over 100 celebrity conversations waiting for you. Some of them are just single guest episodes, because we've had a lot of time to get to really kind of get under the fingernails of our guests. Other shows are a bit like this one, where we've got sort of 20 minutes, half an hour moments, and then some kind of shorter pieces like we've got with Liam Neeson, where we put them all together and just let them into the conversation carousel. So let's jump straight in right now with Donna Eyre.
The Andy J Podcast.
I have an actor, a presenter, a businesswoman, a philanthropist. I'll put my teeth back in and say that properly. It is the wonderful Donna Eyre. How are you doing, Donna?
Hi there. How are you doing? I'm good. How are you?
You know, alive and kicking, need to relearn how to say philanthropist that I've just discovered.
I think, yes. Well, you know, we're all feeling stream. We're all hanging in there.
It's a funny old time, though, isn't it, Donna? Because, you know, we've all been just kind of stuck indoors. Whatever we're doing, most of the time has been indoors, right?
Oh, my goodness. What a year it's been. Yeah, we've been stuck in the house. I mean, it's just been nuts, hasn't it? I can't wait to get out.
Well, there's been so much happening, Donna. Obviously, there's, you know, the whole nation, well, the whole world has been affected by COVID, and some people have had to learn how to do new things. The way the work is primarily from home or from their bedrooms or whatever. Some people have been furloughed, etc.
Yeah.
But a large percentage of the population have found that their day-to-day life has been in the same place, whether they've been working or whether they've been unable to work. They've just been stuck in the same spot, haven't they?
Absolutely. And I think that alone in itself can be quite exhausted. You know, energy creates energy, and we're not all out and about getting inspired by the things we're normally, get inspired by. So it's really important, I think, to take these little breaks, really take care of ourselves during this time. Because, whilst we were juggling and spinning plates before, I think it's all gone to a new level now. So we're doing so much more than ever before, and we're not taking the breaks that we normally would. In a normal professional environment.
Well, what I love, Donna, is that you have started a campaign to bring back break time. And actually, you're representing all of us with this, because I was thinking to myself, do you know what? I do days and days and days where I don't stop. Sometimes I forget to have lunch. You know, you're just on it because you're working from home. You've got no excuse not to see the email, not to record the voice note, not to do whatever it might be. You're just constantly on the go. And I love that you are telling us, hang on, steady on, slow down.
Yeah. Absolutely. The importance of it. And also, I think the psychology behind it, you know, our generation, we sort of put ourselves bottom of the list, which is crazy. We really need to switch that around and put ourselves top of the list, not feeling guilty for taking time for ourselves. You know, it's not selfish. It's actually essential when you think about how many people are dependent on us. If we are not in the best, you know, mental and physical shape we can be in, then we're not going to be much use to anyone. So we have to take these breaks just to really look after ourselves.
Yeah. And it's, do you know what? It's something that I'm as guilty as the next person of doing it. I just haven't been taking them. And you've actually done a study, haven't you? You've teamed up with Diet Coke and the digital magazine Readly, right? And you've...
Yeah, Readly have done lots of research into this. It's a magazine app where you can subscribe and get access to over 5,000 digital magazines through the app, which in itself is quite a nice thing to do anyway, because we all get inspired by magazines. But they're the ones that have actually done a lot of research into this and the importance of just taking that time back, you know, to have a cup of tea, read a magazine, go for a socially distanced walk with a friend, whatever it is that makes you happy. I think it's really important to take those moments, you know, to just get that serotonin and those things that make that, you know, that happy chemical in our brain. And, you know, whether it's, to me, I like having a slice of cake at 5 o'clock. Sometimes I like to take a nap in the middle of the day, which, you know, it's okay to admit it. I think, you know, we've got to stop thinking we have to be and do everything. And actually, yeah, I think it's okay to go at 4 o'clock, just lie on the bed for 20 minutes and then come back refreshed to get through the rest of the day.
I'm particularly here for the cake, Donna. I didn't have you pegged as a cake person. I must say, I love you more for that.
I do. I eat all the naughty food, actually. I'm not really a salad kind of girl.
Does that right? So what's the trade-off there, Donna? Because I've been eating all the cake, Donna, and the bottom line is you can now see it. I mean, I've had to buy a lot of much larger clothes.
I know. I have to say, right, I have been a skinny mini my whole life. Everybody knows that about me. It's no secret. I've always been able to, luckily, being able to eat what I like, but I have to say it definitely slows down now. I don't know if it's lockdown or just an age thing, but for the first time in my life, I've gone up 2 sizes. I mean, I'm quite happy about it. I'm embracing my new curves, which actually I think is a good thing because it helps you age better as well, apparently, a little of extra weight.
Okay. I mean, I'll take that and make that my new mantra.
I don't know if it is just eating more because there's a lot of boredom eating in lockdown. But I'm also working out more. So I'm probably eating more because of that, you know, because I sort of like do a run or a cycle, and then I'll go for a very long walk.
You're getting in there. You're making it work for you. It's just some of us only really visit the fridge, and that's the exercise. And so
I know. I mean, it's just like the new hobby, isn't it? Just eating. Every time I walk past, I'm having a packet of crisps or something naughty.
It's so good to hear someone, because my image of you, Donna, is one of, you're just in a great physical shape. I'm not trying to be flirty or anything with you. I'm just saying, you know what I mean? You know, I can't risk flirting with Donna Eyre. I'd be killed. But you know what I mean? I'm just saying you're not sort of someone that we consider to be anything but in great shape. So to hear that you're enjoying the cakes and the crisps as well is a wonderful thing.
I always have done, though. You know, when you're raised in the Northeast, you do sort of, you know, I wasn't raised on what the children are raised on today, which is, you know, turmeric shots and kale juice. You know, I was raised on quite hearty, dodgy food. So that's always, I try and get all my good stuff in, but you know, I like proper food. I don't really,
This is so refreshing to hear, Donna.
I don't like cold food. Everything today is raw or cold in it. I don't like that. It's not me.
Did you read the Orlando Bloom, A Day in the Life Of, that went out at the weekend? Did you have a chance?
Oh, no. Tell me. What's A Day in the Life Of Ollie Bloom like?
I'm going to have to send it to you, because it reads like it's a joke. I mean, he talks about, you know, getting up at 6 a.m. and having eye time with his baby. And then he has a collagen
eye
shot.
Time. Or,
yeah. I mean, literally just stares in his baby's eyes or whatever, which is fine. You know, great. But the way you just kind of think, is this real?
So
are you a real
funny
person?
It doesn't... That's hilarious. Ollie Bloom used to just be a kid in the Met Bar in the 90s. We all used to hang out together and have fun. But I mean, great. But you know what I have to say? I think we all are allowed to change at any point in our lives. And we all go on these different journeys. And, you know, we probably all are doing some quite wacky stuff right now, let's be fair. We all now know the benefits of meditating and all of that stuff. So I'm open to trying anything, to be honest. The only thing with meditating is I always just seem to fall asleep within about 5 seconds.
Doesn't
into
sound
my
like a bad
mantra.
Thing. That's the result, right? That's what you want.
But I have to say, at least I feel very refreshed after.
Job done. Happy days.
Exactly.
Meditation equals nap time on the sofa. I'm there.
But I am totally open to trying all this like wacky stuff. I think you've just got to find what works for you. And anything goes in 2021, 2020.
I'm going to send you what Orlando Bloom wrote, and you can tell me whether you think it's the ramblings of a madman or someone.
But did he really write?
It was quirky. It was out there. It just felt very LA. Do you know what I mean?
I
think that's the
nicest. Whatever rocks you built, you know, hey, live and let live and all that.
Yes, that's true. Donna, let's have a quick chat about you, if that's all right, because we were rejoicing that we got to see you acting again in The Split on BBC One last year, which was great fun.
Thank you. Oh, my God, that was such a great show. It was so brilliant to be part of it. It was so incredibly well received as well. I think Abby Morgan, who writes The Split, really resonates and writes, you know, she speaks to people on a really raw and true level. And I still get messages about my storyline in that show, actually. So it was a really great job. And to be back on the BBC where I started my career all those years ago, and working with such, you know, really great and well-cast actors, it was a joy.
It was really good to see you back, Donna. But it has got me
thinking. And our mutual friend cast me in that job,
right.
I believe.
The epic Victor Jenkins.
Victor Jenkins, who is a fantastic casting director. And yeah, he's just also cast me in something else. But he gave me, you know, sometimes casting directors cannot always see you do things when you've done certain things. And I was very grateful for that role, because it was a game changer for me, in a sense of it definitely led me on a different creative path. And The Split was a turning point for that. I will always be very grateful for that particular job.
Well, I love that, because it's put you back in the frame as an actor again. You know, you've shown people that you're actually really good at acting, as well as everything else you do. Acting was your first, how we first became aware. It was Biker Grove, wasn't it? So
Done and it. I am very serious about it again now, which is lovely. And I think the reason I wasn't before is because when you're a mom, you know, I don't want to always, I didn't want to be on set. I was a single mother, so I couldn't leave my daughter for 6-8 months of the year. Yeah. Because I wouldn't have been able to take her with me or take her out of school. And I know that that wouldn't have necessarily made me happy. But now, I mean, my daughter's already traveling the world and she's off working. So I can actually now do any role that I really want to do, and I can go anywhere for a role. So I do feel quite excited about now doing some really great and interesting work that speaks to all different kinds of people and tell all different kinds of stories. I'm really loving this new path I'm on.
I'm excited. I think we're going to see loads and loads more of you in movies and TV shows and big hits. I'm really buzzing that there's this Donna's back. You know what I mean?
Yeah, thanks. I know it's kind of weird because I've kind of done the opposite, because I guess during lockdown, lots of people have gone into completely different professions, you know, and crossed into different lines of work. And I, weirdly, have gone back full circle, really focused in lockdown to the one and only thing it was that I started out doing.
Yes, yes.
So I've gone a bit back to front.
Although, Donna, I hope you'll appreciate this. I got sort of thinking about your career, the timeline of your career, because, of course, you started, as you mentioned, BBC Biker Grove when you were a wee bairn. What were you, like 13 or something?
10. 10 years old.
Right, that's nothing.
Yeah.
But it got me thinking about your career timeline and obviously gone back to acting. So I have to ask, will you also go back to pop group, pop stardom?
Oh, God. Don't worry. I think just having people being great, people wanting me on their screens is enough. I would never overstep the mark and start singing for them. No, that would be a step too far.
Because there was
I feel like I've got a lot of love and support from the British public. Why would I ever want to ruin that and start singing?
Because there was Biker Groove, wasn't there? But then there was the other one. Was it Crush? Is that right? Is that my?
Yeah, you know, I feel I was forgiven for that mistake because I was so young. So I think people have been very forgiving with me when I've been able to get away with all those things because of my then age. But I think to make those mistakes now as a grown woman, I'm not sure people would be so forgiving.
Oh, bless you. I love it. I had to put it in there because I just thought it would be a bit of a giggle.
Yeah, I'd love to think. You know what, though? Actually, maybe that's... I'm not sure if we've got enough time left in this lockdown, but singing lessons, maybe that could have been something I could have... started, but I would have had to maybe start that at the beginning of lockdown, doesn't still have had any effect.
Oh, it's never too late, Donna. It's never too late.
Never too late.
You can always do it. I'd love to see it happen. But I'm really buzzing. You know, I'm so pleased that you're back. I'm so pleased you're on the scene. And I feel like there's lots of exciting things lying ahead for you, Donna.
Thank you.
I've got to ask, because, and I know it sounds a bit glib, but your apologies for that, but it is what it is. Are you happy? Because you sound in a really good place.
Thank you. That's a really nice question, actually. Lots of us don't actually ask people if they're happy. But you know what? I am. I'm quite a happy, quite a simple person, really. It doesn't take a lot for me to be happy. I think taking my little breaks, getting enough sleep, it's really just the things that keep us all happy, isn't it?
Yeah.
Getting enough company, you know, feeling fulfilled in what we do. I think this time's been really reflective for everyone to really think about what makes us happy and what do we want for our future. So I think, yeah, you know, I feel very blessed and thankful that my family are safe during, you know, a year when that's not the case for everyone. Yes. So I think I feel very grateful that safe, my family are safe. You know, life's not perfect, but it's never going to be. We can't always have it all at the same time. But yeah, I think we've really got to just be thankful for what we do have during these times, because when you look at what's going on in the world, there's a lot of devastation. And I think it would be, you know, we have to remember and be grateful for what we do have right in front of us. Sorry, that sounded a bit. Did I go a bit Orlando Bloom?
You see, we've now penned a new term. Oh, I've gone a bit Bloom there.
Have I gone a bit Bloom? Sorry, did I lose the audience?
No, you were on form. No, you're absolutely right. Of course, you know, it's been a time to reset, to take stock,
yeah,
and to figure out what's important and kind of realign our values and stuff. Of course, yeah, that's not to take away from the people that have had real struggles with either health or work, paying the bills, etc. That's, you know, there's been an awful lot of that, and that's going to continue.
But I just feel really lucky to have, I know it sounds really stupid, but to have a nice warm bed every night. You know, when I look around and I see that again, that's not the case for people. I think, God, we're so blessed, actually, that we can always want more and da da da. But actually, football's the end of the day, isn't it?
I mean, what is it that drives you, Donna? Because you've achieved an awful lot in your career and your life, your personal life as well. You know, you've, like you say, you're a mum, etc. So, I mean, what is it that keeps you motivated, that gets you jumping out of the bed in the morning?
I think I'm a type of person that does need to have projects to keep me happy. You know, I like to be learning and exploring things all the time. I'm very curious by nature. So as long as I've got enough creatively to keep me busy, and I always seem to do that, I think, you know, checking in, making sure my loved ones are safe, which I do, and they are. So as long as that continues, I'm happy. Yeah, I think, and, you know, we're all good. We've got food, shelter and love, right? What else do we need?
Sounds good. A giggle. You know, it's nice to laugh.
Oh, yeah. Hang on. If we want to get into it, yeah, I can't wait to have a night out. I can't wait to go dancing. I can't wait to go on holiday, swim in the sea.
Yes.
Yeah, swim in the ocean. That would be nice. I mean, maybe even wear high heels again. Who knows?
You had me with everything except high heels. Yeah.
Yeah, get all dressed up and be glamorous just for one night only. Who knows?
Well, I wish that happens to you in the very, very near future, Donna, because it's always good when people are out partying and when they're allowed to do it. So fingers crossed we can get ourselves back out here.
Yeah, London's going to be buzzing again very soon. We've got this, guys.
We have. Let's hope so.
We're almost there. And we've all done so well.
Brilliant. Brilliant. Donna, lockdown aside, any other big moves for you ahead?
I am about starting off projects, which is exciting. So I'm getting back onto set. And then I started doing a bit of writing, actually. I've also got a script that I'm thinking of directing as well.
Wow. Blimey, there's a change of direction. Fantastic.
There's just so much good material out there right now. It's a really good time. You know what? I was worried that roles would get a bit thin on the ground as you get older, and actually it's just got better. I think thanks to more women directors and writers as well now, it's actually got more interesting. So it is a good time to be back on set.
Brilliant. Good, good. Well, I look forward to watching you on our screens in the very near future, Donna. Thank you.
Thank you, and take care, be safe and all that. The Andy J
Podcast. I really like Donna, as you can hear. So, it's that time. It's that time. If you have come for some Hollywood conversation with a legend, then you have come to the right place. You have, if you fast forwarded, you've missed a lovely chat with Donna. You really missed a lovely chat with Donna Eyre. I think she's great. But here we go. It's the one and only, so excited to say, Liam Neeson and his lovely son, Michael Richardson, who is also, he's a brilliant part of this lovely film, by the way. Michael doesn't say a lot because it's Liam Neeson. You know where to let your dad talk. And of course, that's what he does. But yes, anyway, here we go. Liam Neeson and Michael Richardson on the Andy J podcast. Let's do it.
Hey, Andy.
Hey,
How
Andy.
How you doing? Hi, guys. How's it going? Wow, you're having a busy day of it. So I have to start by sharing something with you, which is that I watched your film, which obviously has a huge theme about father and son, with my 5-day-old son. And it was such a special moment. And I just thought, well, I've got to talk to you about this. I've got to mention it. Firstly, do you think he's your youngest viewer?
Probably. Well, for a start, congratulations. Thank 5 days old. Wow.
You know, five days old?
5 days old, yeah.
Wow.
I'll tell you something that a very dear friend of mine told me when she saw Michael lying in his crib when he was very, very young. She turned to me and she said, you know, you're a hostage for the rest of your life, albeit a willing one, but you're still a hostage. So I'm saying it to you.
I love it. I love it. Well, do you know, it immediately, because of all the emotion, and you two, obviously, you carry the film. There's so much of it is about the father and son relationship and rebuilding that dynamic. And I'm sitting there with this tiny little human being that I'm, you know, I'm a big part of. And I'm just thinking to myself, right, I've got to ask the guys, you know, how do we move forward? I mean, you guys have been father and son your whole life, Michael and Liam, for a good 25 years now. Any advice?
Just listen, just share as much as you can with your son, you know, talk to him. You don't necessarily have to baby talk. I remember reading to Michael a kid's version of Moby Dick when he was 2, maybe 3. I don't know if you remember that, Michael, but you can't start too young. Seriously, just share everything with them.
Well,
they're like sponges. They're like sponges. They just absorb everything, you know.
Well, I've introduced
as well
them
as
to
different
movies.
Languages.
So I've introduced him to movies at a very young age, which is a wonderful thing. Guys, I'm mindful of time as well. I, of course, have to ask you about how it was performing in this movie, firstly together and also with the very obvious parallel with your own lives, the tragedy that you've suffered. That's very clear on screen. How was your approach for that? And did you have to have a beat before you agreed to take this movie? Because it was a big thing to be doing.
I didn't. When I read the script, I knew it was, I'd likened it to quite a mild punch in the gut, but it made me all the more interested to be involved with it and to, ideally, to do it with my own son, Michael, and who then was perhaps too young. He was 22, but anyway, James Darcy met Michael and worked with him for 4 or 5 hours, and called me and says, you know, I think this will work, the two of you. So I was thrilled. To say it was cathartic, it's such a cliche to say it was cathartic. I guess it was. But all the time we were surrounded by this extraordinary crew of filmmakers who kept us in a kind of a permanent hug, especially during these kind of dramatic scenes. They were beautiful. They were great. And that gave us great confidence. Gave me great confidence, knowing I could go to whatever depth of emotion was required, and yet you were being held buoyant by this beautiful crew of filmmakers.
Wonderful. Well, thank you for that. I'm out of time, but I really appreciate your time, and thank you. The film's lovely. So thank you very much for your company today.
Thanks,
thank
much.
You, Andy.
The Andy J Podcast.
Whew. There we go. Hollywood legend giving me dad advice. Brilliant. And he called me a hostage. He said I was a hostage. The man from Taken called me a hostage. Yes. That's a bucket list tick for you. Brilliant. Now then, there's a new show out on Netflix called The Irregulars. And one of the men tasked with carrying one of the most famous characters of all time, Sherlock Holmes, is the brilliant Henry Lloyd Hughes. He is such a gifted actor. And a very, very nice guy. Let's hear from him. He's the star of Killing Eve, The Inbetweeners, Indian Summers, several movies, and a brand new show that has just landed on Netflix, where he plays the one and only Sherlock Holmes. It's The Irregulars, and he is Henry Lloyd Hughes. How you doing, Henry?
I'm good, thanks. I'm good. Thanks for having me. Thanks for having me in the wonderful world of showbiz entertainment that we find ourselves in.
Do you know what? It is a heavy showbiz entertainment show today, actually. Lots of you.
I know. You've got some lofty guests. I hope I match up.
Well, do you know what, Henry? I have seen, right? Obviously, I've seen basically everything you've done because you've been in pretty much all my favourite shows, right? So
you're a man of taste, what can I say?
Well, it got me, right, knowing we were going to talk today, I've obviously had a chance to kind of check you out online and kind of do a bit of research into the man behind the actor, as it were.
Yeah.
And the one thing that I've got to pick you up on from the very start is how you describe yourself in your social media biogs, the most famous actor you've never heard of.
Yeah. That's because that's the living reality of my life, Andy. No one's ever recognised me from my artistic output, but they think they might know me from somewhere. But they normally think that I'm someone's brother, or someone they sat next to at a wedding, or maybe a plumber that they once used that they can't quite remember the name of. So that's the level of fame that I'm operating at. I've got absolutely no complaints with that, by the way. That suits me down to the ground.
I'm trying to work out the reasoning behind this, though, Henry, because the shows you've been in and the massive roles you've played should mean that you're getting recognised by everyone. But then again, you do have a variety of different looks. You know what I mean? You've got lots of different facial hair going on, lots of different... I mean, in Sherlock alone, in the Irregulars, you start off with this beautiful glowing mane of hair and then you're this kind of very cropped, almost anemic.
Yeah, I know. I know. It's rare that you get to do it in a single show. It's like watching my CV in a single show. honestly, it is one of the perks of the job, getting to have fun with that stuff and, show yourself in a variety of different guises. And the Irregulars is a kind of rare example whereby I actually, the kind of rough sketch and template that I had in my head is kind of exactly what you see on screen. Lucy Sibbick, who did the hair and makeup, who had just come off the back of winning an Oscar, obviously elevated my ideas to giddy new heights. But I always knew that we needed to make the two versions of Sherlock that you see in the show as wildly different as possible, because a lot has happened to that character, and a lot has happened in his world, and we needed to tell that story visually. So hopefully we push them in either direction, and yet it still feels like one coherent dude.
Well, like about this, Henry, is that you've had so many different iterations of Sherlock Holmes played by so many different actors, from Will Ferrell, Cumberbatch played him, Downey Jr., Johnny Depp, Johnny Lee Miller. I think according to the Guinness Book of Records, isn't he the most portrayed literary human character in film and TV history? So there's a lot of Sherlocks out there, right? So when I heard that you were playing the character of Sherlock, and I knew nothing about the show before, I've seen the whole series now, but before I'd seen any of it, I was thinking to myself, okay, so how's Sherlock going to be any different and how's he going to fit into this? And then straight away, you realise that the landscape of the show, because you don't appear till the middle of the series, you realise that the landscape of Sherlock's environment is going to be something that we've never seen him in before. And then you come along and just blow the roof off. This is not Sherlock Holmes that we've met before. This is, wow. I mean, a troubled soul, to say the least.
Yeah, thanks, man. Yeah, I feel like it's the Sherlock of the apocalypse, and there's more than a slight whiff of the apocalypse in 2020, and dare I say it, 2021 as well. So I feel like we've accidentally ended up with the what feels like a contemporary version, even though obviously we're set in Victorian London. I feel like there is the stakes for all the characters, and of course Sherlock himself is not too dissimilar from some of the things that we're all feeling. Yeah. Hopefully not everyone looks as bad as I do in the show, Andy.
Well, the beautiful thing about this, Henry, is we do see you looking great. We see you as yourself, as the handsome man that you are. And then, yes, the COVID-inflicted version of Sherlock, as it were.
Yeah, exactly.
What a wreck.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. We really wanted to see what would happen if we slightly deconstructed the Sherlock myth and had more of a question about to what extent he is real and to what extent his legend is justified. He's the self-doubting Sherlock, the self-loathing Sherlock, rather than the, swaggering, swashbuckling version.
Yes, he doesn't believe the hype. It's very cool.
No, he really doesn't. He really doesn't. He's struggling to believe the hype.
It's clever, man. It's really, and it's a good show as well. Sort of think, first episode in, couple of minutes in, you're thinking to yourself, hang on, what, all the characters are going to be like these quirky teens? What? How's that going to work?
Yeah.
And then suddenly the universe of it unfolds, and it's just very clever. It's a good watch.
Thanks. Yeah. I think it's really entertaining to watch, because you've got the two plot strands. The episodic kind of peril of different monsters attacking people in London, and they can't quite work out what's going on. And then the overriding bigger plot, which obviously I won't spoil, but there are kind of greater forces behind everything that's happening. And it reminded me of some of the shows that I was so into, back in the day, like the X-Files and stuff like that, where there's plenty of jump scares. And yet there's also a kind of overriding bigger drama as well, you know, a kind of conspiracy, as it were. That's it reminded me of some of the best, you know, kind of, I don't know, supernatural science fiction. You know, we haven't seen, of all the previous Sherlocks, of which I'm a huge fan of, we haven't necessarily seen that kind of peril before those characters before.
Do you know, I really like that. Just thinking about it, Henry, it's almost Sherlock meets Stranger Things.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, those you're seeing the world of Victorian London through this gang of young characters. And yet there's peril and kind of supernatural terror left, right and center. So I think it's quite interesting in terms of where it fits into the canon of period drama, for want of a better word. And you know, all of that television that we're very, very familiar with in this country because we do it so well, but taking it in a slightly new direction. And I think it's going to be really interesting to, you know, for the traditional period drama audience to kind of have their eyes on Stork. And then also for a young, you know, if you're a young audience that are into contemporary drama, then what's that going to do to have these characters look very different to them, but I think in the way that Tom has written the show, sound very contemporary at the same time. I really feel like they feel like real young people. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. No, it's thoroughly believable. Even though it's kind of got this mad supernatural edge, you're with it. And actually, people like Buffy the Vampire Slayer and things will be well into it as well. It's one of those things that I can't help. I mean, I binged it. I can't help but assume that's how other people are going to do it as well. You get sucked into the universe and then your day's gone because it's just like, whoa! That was crazy. Great fun.
Yeah. It's like watching, you know, a kind of a compendium of horror novellas, you know, back, you know, one after the other, back to back.
Yeah.
And the monsters do just kind of get, as I'm sure you know because you've seen it, more and more gruesome as we go through the series.
It is quite punishing at times, actually, when you think, how do you get someone worse than this? And I don't want to say anything because I don't want to spoil it, but the good thing is, it is out now. It's not like we're talking about it's coming out in a few weeks' time and people have to wait. It's out now. It's just dropped on Netflix. And go watch it, basically. I mean, Henry, we've got to talk about some of your other roles as well, because you have, like, I mean, I wasn't saying it lightly. You have been in some of my favourite shows. I mean, Killing Eve Season 2, my goodness. I mean, you got quite a whack from Jodie Comer with that book, didn't you? But What a role
to play, man.
In what a show. I mean, when that comes in, because, you know, your CV is incredible. And like you say, for whatever reason, you know, you've got this ability to not be recognised. And yet, when you look at your CV, it is ridiculous. So when something like that comes in, Killing Eve, first season was a standout triumph. You know you're going into something great. What does that do for you? What do you think? Is it exciting? Is it nerve-wracking? Is there pressure?
I, honestly, for me, that was like one of the dream scenarios, because I felt 100% like a competition winner. You know what I mean? Like as a working actor, someone who auditions for all my roles, like to get a chance to get into a show where there's a huge appetite and an audience for it already, and people love it. And on top of that, it's so cool. Like I felt like I'd won every competition, every acting competition that could go. I felt like I'd won it. And also, the other benefit was the pressure was off me, because I'm not a returning character. People aren't going to say, well, hang in a second, who's this guy? Well, you know, what's he doing? It was a kind of a complete free reign to try and do something different. And weirdly, talk about my CV, it's kind of a character where I've said the least. Like, you know, I normally play quite verbose characters, and he's a man of very few words, and it really became an exercise in stillness, actually. That was the challenge, to try and be as still, if not more still, than what Jodie was doing. And that was the dance, really. And we had so much fun with it. You know, they're such an amazing duo, and all the people that make it are so amazing at what they do. And you know, I was just trying to keep up and have fun, so I was delighted and completely heartbroken that I ended up dying. You know, you get maybe what people don't realize, Andy, is when you're making drama, it's not quite the same as being EastEnders, where you're turning over so many episodes a week or whatever. but you do, you know, you sign up to do something and you haven't got all the episodes. And then you get the episode through the post and you go, oh, hang on a second, I'm coming a cropper here. That's not so good. And I thought, how can I campaign? How can I launch a slow campaign on set, you know, while over a coffee to say, would it be such a bad thing if maybe he escaped? But, you know, it's got killing in the title, unfortunately. So sooner or later, chances are you're going to get done.
Yeah, anyone that interacts with Villanelle probably exactly. isn't going to stick around.
Exactly,
You're Sandra Oh, that's kind of it.
Exactly, exactly.
Your goose is cooked. But they must have been, I mean, she, Jodie Comer in particular, is such a remarkable performer. And then I thought to myself, well, I wonder what Henry kind of felt like doing scenes across her. But then I look at the other people that you've performed with, and my goodness, there's a list of lofties, aren't there? Keira Knightley, yeah. Tom Hiddleston, Woody Harrelson, Dominic West, Mark Ruffalo, Benedict Cumberbatch, to name just a few. I mean, I've got a list here of people that, my goodness, man, you have...
And Julie Walters, in Indian Summers. You know, I had so many scenes, you know, not only with her, but really up close with her. You see what I mean? Like, intense emotional scenes. And that's a very illustrious list that you've listed there. And she's right at the very top because, you know, man, she's such a generous performer to be working with. And she gives almost more when the camera's not on her.
Wow.
I know that sounds like a weird technical thing. Sometimes you'd find her, like, crying when it was your close-up, you know, like she's just totally in it and totally engaged with making drama. And, you know, to still be operating at that level when you've been doing it for that many years, you know what I mean? That's such a skill. Yeah. That's such a skill to not be too cynical and not get too, you know what I mean? Not get too blasé about it. And listen, there's like Jodie's headed in the same direction, make no bones about it. I'm sure she'll be damed.
Dave Comer has a certain ring to it. Why not?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, it's great.
Give her the keys to Liverpool.
Too right. And listen, we've got to have a quick word about The Inbetweeners because you were such an important part in that crazy show and indeed the movie. You know, obviously as playing Donovan the bully, you know, nasty Mark.
Yeah.
Do you have really fond memories of that? Do you think we could make the show now? Is it a bit risky now because with the, you know, the way the kind of world is, do you think?
No, I don't think so at all. I mean, like, you know, part of what makes that show timeless, and I always like to think that at some point on any given day, someone is watching it, you know, on a streaming service, you know what I mean? Like, people are still consuming it massively. And the thing is about those characters, the reason why I think it sustains is because, in a weird way, it's a show about boredom. I know it sounds strange, but it's the reason why it chimes with people on a personal level is because it speaks to the hilarity and kind of absolute silliness that mates get up to when they don't have a lot of, you know, they're not the coolest guys on the block, and they're not going to amazing warehouse parties or you know, necessarily snogging the dream girl that they fancy. And I think, weirdly, that makes it relate. Everyone, or the vast majority of people, can relate to that much more than the shows that were out at a similar time, like Skins or whatever, which were great shows. Mm. But I think there was an element of escapism in there, whereas The Inbetweeners, I think, is so rooted in real life. And you could always make comedies that speak to people's real existence, you know, whether it's, I know that there's been a few recently about parenting, you know, I've got two small kids myself, so I see the hilarity and madness involved in trying to raise children. So, you know, the Inbetweeners is timeless, and I think if you write comedy that appeals to what people know and what feels believable, you know, people are always going to watch it, and people are always going to want to make it.
Yeah, no, absolutely, you're right. And plus, it helps that it's just got endless belly laughs because it's just painfully funny. You know?
Yeah, exactly.
A good gag lasts a lifetime. Henry, you've got to tell me about what's next. You've obviously mentioned being a dad. So many of your roles that you can't show your kids. You know, there's like...
Yeah, that's true.
You're going to have to wait till they're a lot older before they know what daddy does.
I know. We haven't broached that subject yet. And I think I might need a bit more of, as you say, a bit more of a kiddie-friendly back catalogue.
Yeah, well, there's Harry Potter. Potter's a pretty big one, to be fair.
True. But, I mean, I appear so fleetingly in that film, you know, which is not unusual when you've got a film that has that many actors in. I appear very, very fleetingly. So, yes, that's my backup. I don't have anything in kid-friendly on the horizon, I must confess. I've got another project which is lined up to do next, but I'm afraid, as in true boring showbiz style, I'm absolutely sworn to secrecy.
Brilliant.
But watch this space. I will be making some television, and it's a really exciting role that I cannot wait to tell you about it. Unfortunately, I can't do it today, but I will be able to do it very soon. And I'm afraid it is the opposite of kid friendly. But you'll see when it's announced.
I'm guessing, knowing the kind of roles you take, Henry, I'm guessing it's not going to be a bland romantic lead.
No, you know what, Andy? I would love to have that in my arsenal, but there's something about my face. People don't want to see me do that. I don't get offered those roles. The kind of great Hugh Grant-esque path to romantic comedy stardom has yet to elude me. But you know, maybe there's time to reimagine when they want a dark and troubled romantic lead in a romantic comedy. Someone who's seen a few harrowing things. That's when I'll get the call up.
I got to say, Henry, listen, the talent is there, man. You are one very, very good
actor.
That's
very kind.
You could turn your hand to anything, and I think your body of work has shown that. You've heard this from so many different people, but you deserve to be recognised everywhere you go. You're that good. So,
That's very kind, very kind. And honestly, thanks so much for watching the show, because, you know, I think people are really going to get themselves, scared witless.
They are.
I think people are in for a real nasty shock, in a good way. And you know, the fact that we're seeing Sherlock in an arena and level of discomfort that we haven't seen before, I think is just adds a little bit of extra sauce, secret sauce on top.
Oh, absolutely, Henry. There must be a kind of one-liner that you're allowed to use to promote the Irregulars. Do you know what it is? I don't know what it is, because there's so many different lines you could use. But what would you say, as one of the big stars of the show, what is the big hook?
I'd say you have to watch this show, because it's so apocalyptic. It makes the real apocalypse that we're living through feel bearable.
Boom. You done it. Nailed it.
That's your take. That's your lift pitch.
There you go.
It's the only thing you can watch, Andy, that's going to make you feel better about 2021. I promise you that. and that includes, you know, this is a show where, you know, people are getting their eyes attacked by birds. So, you know, that's how bad the world we're living is.
Brilliant. Henry, it's been an absolute pleasure. I'd love to have longer chat with you soon, because you've just got so much going on and so much depth. And I want to hear about this new project when you're allowed to talk about it. But thank you so much for your time.
Yeah, today. I'd love to come back on. Yeah, anytime, man. Anytime. Great to speak to you.
Amazing. Thank you, Henry. You have a great day.
Cheers.
Man. Take it easy.
Yeah, cheers. Thanks. Bye.
Bye. The Andy J Podcast. Do check out The Irregulars on Netflix if it sounds like your sort of thing. It's a crazy romp of a show, and I enjoyed it. I've seen the whole series, and I thought it was really, really worth watching. Now then, thank you to Henry Lloyd Hughes. What a pleasure. I'm looking forward to finding out what the next adventure is for him. Now then, my final guest for this week, bless her, she was so, so lovely, because I spoke to her whilst holding my newborn. And I was slightly kind of pensive for the whole chat, because I'm just kind of watching my lovely baby going, don't cry, don't cry, don't cry, don't cry, don't cry, don't cry, don't cry. And he didn't, thank goodness. Anyway, from new show, well, it's a returning show actually to BBC One, The Syndicate. It is the brilliant Taj Atwell.
Hi.
How are you doing?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
Do you know what? I'm quite apprehensive, and I'm going to explain why. I have a two-week-old boy in my arms, fast asleep.
Oh, wow.
And so this is going to be the first ever interview I've done with a sleeping baby in my arms. And I'm hoping he's going to stay asleep.
I've got high hopes for him. I think he's going to be great.
I won't raise my voice too much. You can understand why. I am so thrilled to welcome to the show an actor who has been in some of the greatest television of the last decade. I mean, we're talking shows like Stella, Line of Duty, Truth Seekers, In the Club. There's another one that I can't say on afternoon television, afternoon radio even. My brain is all over the place, but it involves a lady's private parts. And a new show, well, a returning show to the BBC. It is The Syndicate. I am elated to welcome the wonderful Taj Atwell. How are you doing, Taj?
Hi, thank you for having me. I'm good, sitting by a sunny window.
Oh, isn't it nice to have the sunshine back?
Yeah, I'm one of these people that are really affected by the weather. So if it's gloomy, even though I'm a winter baby, I feel a bit gloomy.
There's a thing for that, isn't it? Is it SADS? Is that what it's called?
I think it is, seasonal affective disorder.
I mean, how much is that right? So look, let's get straight in with the heavy stuff. The old lockdown, we've had enough of it now, but it seems to continue and continue, and there might be this European thing coming in and all the rest of it. How are you getting on? Because it's affected everyone in very different ways, but no one seems to have the greatest of stories as a result of lockdown.
No, I'm getting on fine. Thank you for asking. I am looking forward to having lots of cuddles with my siblings, my brother's kids, friends.
Yes. Yes, hugs are a massive thing. I mean, you have still been able to keep working, though, haven't you? Quite a lot of people, you know, they're obviously massive parts of the country and workers and stuff were furloughed, and lots of things like hotels and so on have been really hit by it. And of course, theatres have been massively hit by it. But TV and movie actors have seemed to have found a way to have kept going in one way or another.
Yeah, we did eventually. So obviously we were all in the first lockdown, and then after that, there was still a bit of time before it picked up again. But yeah, eventually it picked up, and I'm so thankful. And I think as a whole, people maybe have a newfound respect for the arts if there wasn't one there before, just because we realised how important it was to get us through.
Yes. And actually, do you know what? People are also realising, I think, how much they are dependent on content. You know, when there's rumours of a new show coming out, probably more than ever, people are, thank goodness, something new to watch.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I mean. This kind of appreciation for the work that we do.
Let's talk about The Syndicate, because this is one of those shows which not only will it be widely anticipated, because this is season four, after something of a break, if I'm not wrong. You know,
I don't know how long it's been. It's been a few years.
It's like six. It's quite a long time between season three and season four. You know, I mean, I realise they're new stories each season and new characters, but nonetheless, you're kind of like, oh yeah, that took a break. Yeah, a six-year holiday. Fair enough. That was more than a lockdown thing. But yeah, it is one of those things that regular viewers will be thinking, do you know what? I used to love that show back in the day. Because the premise remains the same, which is a group of people who buy lottery tickets.
Yeah.
They have managed to buy a ticket that happens to be the winner. And then what happens? And obviously for what is now season four, this new one that you're in, these are a particularly lovely group of people and a very nasty Neil Morrissey.
He's lovely, really. he's misjudged. I don't know. Yeah, we all work at Woodvale Dog Kennels, and which, you know, was amazing because I absolutely love dogs. And yeah, it's a wild goose chase in this particular series to track down the ticket.
Which I love, actually, because you kind of go, well, hang on. Because what I love is I've only seen episode one. By the way, got to say, it's out on the 30th of March. It's important to signpost that now. It's out next week. Good news. New telly coming out next week. Brilliant. But the thing is, episode one, which is the only one I've seen, is just loaded with so much jeopardy. Never mind the fact that someone has managed to take all of your money. Each of you in the syndicate, in this case, you've mentioned you all work in a kennels. Each of you has just literally layered on every possible heart-wrenching storyline going into each one of you, just shared it out amongst your characters. You know, it's like, oh, wow, they've gone there with her and there with her and there with her.
Yeah.
You, of course, are, well, you've just had a challenging boyfriend and you happen to be pregnant. Nobody's got any money. And how on earth is anyone going to pay for anything? Well, hallelujah, you've won the lottery. But yeah.
I love how you've summed that up. Very succinct.
Well, obviously there's a lot more going on, but in, you know what I mean, though, it must have been the case as you were turning the pages of the script, you were kind of going, okay, oh, so she's got that issue, oh, she's got the bailiffs, right, she, and what am I, oh, pregnant, right, thanks for that. There we go.
Well, and there's even more to it than that, but that's what I love. There's a story in there, there's a character in there that everyone can relate to.
Yeah, yeah.
And the stakes just get higher and higher throughout, and it's just so fast paced. And especially, as you've seen the first episode, the second half of it, it just gets so exciting and so, oh my goodness, what's going to happen now? Yeah. And I love that.
I'm frustrated now. You know, end of episode one. I'm now like, oh, come on. We've been used to binging. Do you know what I mean? I would have immediately skipped us to episode two, which I don't have access to right now. I know. I want to know what's going to happen. I mean, you're really rooting for all these people after the first episode, and it's really great. I'm thoroughly enjoying it. It's going to be a really, really well-received show, I'm convinced.
I hope so. Yeah, it's just warm, fun, and it's got all the jeopardy as well. So hopefully, yeah, people will be ready to watch something a bit more lighthearted.
Plus, it's filmed in Yorkshire and Monaco. So, you know, you're kind of lucked in on the location stakes there.
Well, I absolutely love Leeds. It's one of my favourite cities. So I was so thankful to be going back there. And I've never been to Monaco. And that was a whole new experience. Just absolutely magical. So, yeah, very, very thankful.
Monaco is glorious, isn't it? You guys, obviously, your characters are so excited when you're there and you describe it as paradise on earth and all kinds of things. And you're just so thrilled to be there. But the reality is that it is, it's quite a magical, you can't help but notice the money, you know.
It's mad though, isn't it? Oh. Let's be honest. It's like, it's magical and absolute madness. It's like a place I have never known. Just the cars that I've never even seen in my life. Every kind of Ferrari, Lamborghini, Porsche, yeah, that you can think of.
They've got the lot. Mind you make a wrong turn. I mean, I've hosted some motorsport in Monaco before and spent a bit of time there.
Oh, wow.
And you make a wrong turn, you go into the wrong cafe and you realise it quite quickly. I ordered a croque monsieur and it cost me €17. I was like, huh? What?
Yeah, that's about right. I know.
They really get them, but you know, it's all part of the fun, isn't it?
You know what you're getting when you go out there, though.
true, yeah. And it's so I would just be staying in the hotel most of the time. Yep, no, we're fine. I'll just make a sandwich.
a little trip to the Carrefour and make a little sandwich in your hotel room.
Exactly.
We did a lot of that.
Yeah, I bet you did. Well, I mean, was this film during the COVID pandemic? Were you able to still get it on?
So we have the main initial lockdown that everyone did, and then we went to Leeds, and within a week of being in Leeds, or a couple of weeks of being in Leeds, Leeds went into a local lockdown. Then we left Leeds and went to France, and 2 days of being there, there was a lockdown there. So I had three.
That's why the streets are so empty.
yeah, exactly. In the shot as well, the streets are empty. So it was I've had my fair share of lockdowns now.
I tell you what, though,
in different cities and different countries.
I guess one of the few advantages would be if I were a sound recordist on the show, I'd be reasonably happy because there's a lot less to worry about in terms of what's in the sky.
Oh, yeah. I mean, way less people. Apparently, that time of year, Monaco, you can't even move. When we went, it was very, very quiet.
You did it. You've done it at the right time. You've seen the right Monaco, even if it was lockdown Monaco.
Really? Okay.
It's all good. No, it's brilliant. Let's talk about Kay Mellor. She's the creator and she's an independent powerhouse, isn't she?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I find her so empowering as a woman and someone to look up to. And she's achieved so much in her life. And, you know, she had her first child when she was 15, 16. And look at what she's gone on to do. I think it's amazing.
She's a remarkable lady, isn't she? And I mean, how involved was she? Obviously, she wrote, she created the series. How involved was she in the day-to-day? Did you see her? Did she kind of brief you and walk you through it? Or?
Yeah, absolutely. She's over everything. She knows the characters and the stories inside out. She's on top of everything. You have to force her to have a day off. She works that hard. She doesn't like having a day off or having any time to herself. She just wants to be there in amongst it all. And, you know, has such stamina to direct, executive produce, to write, to be there for us as people as well. It's a lot of work, and she's committed to all of it. And she lets you breathe life into your character as well and make it your own, which I think is amazing artistically as an actor to be able to do that.
Well, you can kind of tell she loves it because, you know, you'd never assume someone else's circumstances, but I have assumed in this case that she doesn't need the work. You know what I mean? She could probably have a very nice life just living out her days, but she just seems so kind of up for creating new, brilliant, exciting, page-turning scripts, you know?
She's got so many stories, and that's a sign of fantastic, right? Of all this plethora of stories that she's got to tell. I mean, Steven Spielberg is a fan of hers, flew her out to America, so she's got a strong support system.
That's a proper mic drop story, isn't it? You know, having a crew dinner. Hey, what's the coolest person you've ever had to do anything for? Well, Steven Spielberg flew me out to meet him once. Boom.
And he's a massive fan of the Syndicate, so he flew Kay out years ago.
That's amazing.
How crazy is that?
How does that make you feel? Obviously, you won't have had that in your head when you're performing, but the knowledge that he's a fan means he's almost definitely going to watch you in season 4. I mean,
I don't know. That didn't even cross my mind, to be honest. I've only just remembered now.
But now you've remembered. I mean, how does that feel? I mean, the guy could make anything happen.
I don't know.
There's a tinge of excitement.
Like,
I can hear it. There's a tinge of excitement, isn't there? It's kind of like, yeah, do you know what? The right people are watching this.
Oh,
this would be very cool. No, that's amazing. I mean, one thing that has struck me about your career, I hope you don't mind me saying, but your range is phenomenal. I mean, I've seen you in lots and lots of different shows, and you seem to be handed some of the most challenging subplots going. You know, you're always the one that's got the issues that are just, right, I'm going to have to really earn my chops here. I've got to cry on cue. I'm going to have issues. There's going to be problems. I'm going to have to die for another person. Obviously, that's in a comedy thing. I'm thinking Truth Seekers. But, you know, you've got to really hand yourself over. You never seem to have just the easy, the generic romantic lead. Do you know what I mean? You've got the good, the gritty characters.
The drama seems to follow me. In life and on screen.
Oh, really?
No, I don't know. I don't know. I'm thankful for it. I never really think about it, to be honest. But also, I've got a fantastic agent who, you know, gets me fantastic auditions and in a position where I can kind of look at scripts and you know, sort of choose the path that I want to go down and the roles that I want to play, and push myself and just keep pushing myself.
What was the moment for you? Because you've been in such major dramas, and as you say, you're in this lovely position where you can pick and choose. What was the moment for you when you realized that was going to be the case? Because a lot of actors, you know, they basically take whatever they can get because, you know, it's a job. But you're not in that position. You take roles you want to take.
I mean, look, it took me 10 years 10 years of working to slowly get there, and I'm not completely there yet. I still have to audition like everyone else for most things, and some things I don't, and I'm fortunate to be offered. But it's just keep on going, really. Like I said, it took me 10 years to even be in a position where I can kind of ish choose. And that's all I really wanted, is to be able to have the choice as an actress of the stories that I want to tell.
I like it. I mean, what do you know what I like about your character in The Syndicate is it seems to have a little bit of lots of your roles. Do you know what I mean? As in,
yeah, that's true. Never thought of it like that.
it's like a lovely amalgam. Well, because there's plenty of lighthearted, lovely, playful moments like you have in Stella. You've got sort of touching on the comedy. By the way, I do have to ask you what it's like working alongside Julian Barrett at some point. What a dude. I mean, what a dude.
He is the nicest. I wasn't totally aware of his body of work, but I knew, you know, everyone kind of knew what he was in and stuff. But he just, as a human, he's just so lovely and so funny, really charming. I absolutely loved working with Julian.
Yeah, He's really cool. I mean, everything he does on screen is pretty epic. So, yeah, I'm a big fan of his. But then, of course, you've got the serious stuff. Sorry, I'm just kind of coming back to, you know, your character in the syndicate. Then you've got the serious stuff, which, of course, we've seen you do so beautifully in The Line of Duty. So, you know, it was just a lovely collection of different things.
Thank you.
What do you prefer doing? Because, you've got the whole gamut there. You know, you'll get the comedy jobs, you'll get the serious jobs, you'll get the hard-hitting emotional stuff. What do you think? Yeah, okay, I'm
I always get asked this question. I'm not sure. I think comedy is something that I always go back to, and I like to try and do at least one comedy a year just because I find it probably the most comfortable to perform. I always come back to comedy, but I don't know, more and more I'm trying to push myself and go into different areas of, I don't know, it's hard, isn't it? I absolutely loved playing Alara in Truth Seekers because it was like nothing. I'd never played a baddie before.
Yeah, but what a baddie. I mean, completely bonkers following a kind of crazed leader type baddie. But
yeah, a baddie who was then also influenced and vulnerable because she was also influenced by a greater force than her. I don't know, that was so different for me to play something like that. And in Vandervalk, I played two twins and one was a psycho who got the other one killed, and that was really different and challenging. I like stuff that challenges me.
It's pushing the envelope, isn't it? I mean, that, I guess that's the thing with you. You've never played the same character twice.
All of a sudden, I'm like racing through my head of everything that I've played.
Well, you know what I mean? As in, you're not, there's nothing typecast about you, which is such a rare position as an actor. And wow, I mean, that's impressive.
Oh, thank you. I don't think I've ever sat and taken stock, really. You just kind of get on with it. But I definitely want to push myself and keep challenging myself and, you know, think what I can achieve and what I can do.
Can I ask you a quick one about Line of Duty? Because it's back now. You were in it for, what, 3 seasons? Is that right?
No, I was only in season 5.
Were you? For some reason, anyway, fine, I'm wrong, my apologies, but I'd love to ask you a brief one about it, because it is back, it came back last night.
Yeah.
And it I don't know if you saw the episode, but it does seem to me that they've used a heck of a lot more code. I mean, there were people decoding what was being said.
I haven't got around to watching it yet. I need to sit and get on it. I'll probably binge watch it all in one go. That's what I've done with all the other series, is set aside 2 or 3 days and just binge watch the whole series. So
that seems
I need to set aside time and do that.
But you didn't find that when you were on it, there was just a lot of shortened sentences that could have just been a lot easier if it was just...
I mean, I was definitely saying words that I had never said before, which was great because it expanded my vocabulary. and I had that dictionary out a few times. But I don't know, I need to sit and watch.
Yeah.
I know a couple of words have been trending on Twitter, so be interested to...
Lot of code, lot of decoding needed.
Right, okay.
Great fun. But great fun. Listen, I've really loved our chat, and I genuinely think the new show is brilliant. Just because it's easier for you to plug it than me, tell me, why should people be watching The Syndicate when it comes out on the 30th?
Oh, well, I just hope it's, like I said before, this big, warm, fun hug journey that we can take everyone on. I'm hoping it's kind of what people... Well, it's what I want to watch right now, and it's what I need right now, something easy and fun and lighthearted with all this beautiful, poignant moments that I'm hoping people can relate to.
And you get to fantasize about how you'd spend 27 million quid.
And there is that. Yeah. There is that. And there's loads of dogs. Who doesn't like dogs?
And there's loads of dogs. You must have thought about it. How would you spend that money if it went to you?
You know, we've been asked this question a few times. I'd want to treat people that are near and dear to me and probably start up a company, female-led company. I'm not sure what the idea is yet. That can kind of help women, lift women out of poverty, lift women out of circumstances that are kind of not helping them right now. And, yeah, I'm not sure. I haven't quite figured it out yet. What would you buy?
I'd probably have a croque monsieur in Monaco.
Oh, would you? Oh, wow.
So. I think it would cover
get a private jet out there with that money and get one. get a chef to make it for you specially.
No, do you know what? I don't know. There's just so much, isn't there? But I love the fact that you're looking towards helping others, because I think that would definitely I would definitely have to put a decent percentage towards that if it was, you know, you
absolutely
don't need 27 million, do you?
No,
27 million. You know, you could take a third of that and be very, very, very comfortable for many generations. So 2/3 to something worthy would be great. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, sure.
Brilliant. Oh, bless you. Listen, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you very much. I'm sure the new show is going to be a huge success.
And Fingers crossed.
I can't wait to see what else you're in. What mad role are you going to get thrown next? You must know. Are you allowed to tell me?
I can't yet, but I've just wrapped on a movie called What's Love Got to Do With It, which was really great fun.
Ooh.
And that's a big, wonderful rom-com that was penned by Jemima Khan. That's coming out next year. So looking forward to that being released in cinemas.
Brilliant. Oh, exciting. Well, I hope we get to speak again soon in that case.
Yeah, fingers crossed. Thank you so much for having me.
Brilliant. Thank you. Really appreciate it. And good luck with it all.
The Andy J Podcast.
So there we have it, my amazing guests, concluding another episode of the Andy J Podcast. Wow, wow, wow. Haven't we packed them in today? Donna Eyre, Liam Neeson, Michael Richardson, Henry Lloyd Hughes and Taj Atwell. Wow. Thank you to all my lovely guests. And crucially, thank you to you, your brilliant person, for tuning in and listening. I really do appreciate you giving me your time this week and checking out the show. It means the world. We love doing these shows. We love having these conversations, but only because we're putting them out there for you guys. And so many of you are in touch with me and say some of the nicest things. And it really, really, I greatly appreciate it. Of course, there are some trolls that say some slightly unpleasant things. And, you know, we just try and ignore those because they're not very nice. I don't see why you'd give out nasty in the world. But those of you that are kind and generous and thoughtful and take the time to listen to the show and then feedback lovely things, wow, you are really good people. Thank you so much. Lovely show lined up for you next week. I've got a special feature-length conversation for you with Mel Gedrich. Mel from Mel and Sue. She is such a hoot. I can't wait. So that's it for this week on the Andy J Podcast. All that's left for me to do is say to you, have a really good, happy week. Be nice, make someone smile, and take care of yourself. Thank you. See you next week. Bye-bye. If you're enjoying the Andy J Podcast, we'd love a review. In fact, if you're enjoying the show, why not tell your friends? Podcasts live and die on, well, often word of mouth, so please tell your friends. Like, subscribe, review, and share. Thank you.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.